Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Lord Onyx, and all the hosts 7 nights a week for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio. Under a Shady Tree with Lord Terry and Lord Onyx. Come on in, grab a glass of sweet iced tea and sit right down. These Southern Pagan boys are about to start their talk. Lord Terry and Lord Onyx.
And good evening, good afternoon, good morning, good wherever in the world you are. This is Reverend Terry Power, and you are under a shady tree with Terry and Robin. And Robin, how are you tonight, darling?
I'm doing well. It's nice to actually have you on the radio with me this evening.
Yeah, I'm glad that we've got something like resembling a decent internet connection. I'm not going to say we're tearing up, setting any records, but it looks like we can, run the board and talk on the radio tonight. So it's all good.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So for those of you that are not aware, the internet issues I am having are at a hotel in Fashionville in Haiti, one of the suburbs of Port-au-Prince. And I've been here all week doing my day job and conducting some fiber training and reconnecting with friends and seeing some of the places that I saw 5 years ago after the earthquake and seeing the progress that's been made. There's still a long way to go, but it's such a joy to see how far things have progressed and to be here in Haiti again. I was here, like I said, 5 years ago. And one of the things that struck me, and Robin has seen some of my pictures, might have a building in one block that is a pile of rubble that was a two-story building. And in the next block where there's a solid wall, there was art, paintings, and amazing thing where they cut out steel with a scroll saw, and then on the back side they'll pound a detail into it. Sometimes the enamel paint them and colors, and sometimes they leave them just pretty much natural metal color. And all of this and carving, and the artists just kept being artists. I was struck. And I fell in love, I think, a little bit with the people that could sit in the tents and laugh with their family. And they're living in tent cities. And they're still creating art. And in the midst of all of the destruction and rubble, there was color and beauty and art. And, you know, that moved me then, and to be able to come back now and spend, you know, 6 days with old friends that I met then that I've stayed in touch with, and to just be a part of seeing all of this again, and training a new group of people that are going to work on the fiber here, and to see the improvements. It's just been a joy. The internet here at the hotel, on the other hand, has been less than ideal. But the other parts of my trip have been truly amazing. I've made new friends, connected with new people, and reconnected with Mikey and Justin. It's been a really, really good trip, and it's been good for my heart. And I'm tired like you wouldn't believe, and looking forward to Saturday morning without an alarm clock. But all in all, it has been an amazing and wonderful experience down here. So I wanted to share all that with our listeners. I mean, it is beautiful down here. And, you know, it was hot and humid and sticky today, as opposed to what's the weather like at home, baby?
Oh, it was like 70 degrees today and sunny and dry, mostly.
Oh, okay.
We
so
had a little sprinkle in the afternoon, but it came and went.
Okay, so not too bad. Not like last week.
No.
Yeah, last week I was in Austin, Texas, where it was hot and humid, and you had snow. We had snow
yes.
the day I arrived here, right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
Yeah, so... So we are expecting to talk to Jack Montgomery tonight. That's why we invited everybody to listen to us tonight, specifically to hear us speak with Jack. An author has some a book and some CDs out on folklore, and is a musician with a band called Water Sprite, I believe, if I'm saying that correctly or getting that right. So let's go ahead and bring Jack on. And
okay.
Jack, are you with us?
Okay. I'm here.
Hi, Jack.
All right.
Nice to meet you.
Hi.
Hey, did I say everything correctly in my intro?
Sounds good to me.
All
yeah,
right.
I've been... I've been doing this for... Gosh, a number of years now. Been doing the American folk religion since 1974, and the music I played when I was younger, and I started it back in 2000. So I've been going at it for about 15 years.
Nice.
Excellent. So what instruments do you play?
I play guitar, banjo, dulcimer, harmonica. I play at the mandolin, but not enough to really. And I play ukulele.
Nice.
But what we do is would be classified as alt folk or alternative folk, spiritual folk. Most of it with a sort of an earth-centered quality to it. At least the first four albums have that.
Huh.
Definitely the first couple of albums were that way.
Terrific.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about the folk religions stuff that you've been working on.
Well, last weekend I was flown up to Philadelphia to a little town called Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is just north of Philadelphia. And I was part of a three-part mini-conference on the tradition of powwowing, or Braukerei, which is common amongst people of German-American descent. And it came over with the colonists in the 1700s. It's a healing tradition, but it also has a spirit component. It has, what doesn't it do? It's enjoyed a kind of a little bit of an awakening in the last 5 years. When I first encountered it in field studies in the 1970s, no one knew about it, or at least very few people did. And it turns out that there's a direct connection between the Pennsylvania Dutch and the Germans in South Carolina, where in called the Dutch Fork, where I did my research. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I was going to say, I actually live in the Williamsport, Pennsylvania area, and we have a lot of Pennsylvania Dutch in this area. And people talk about the powwow, you know, shaman, if you will, frequently. And my mom was actually friendly with a woman in the Poconos who was a powwow practitioner. So there's a long history of that here in this area.
Wherever Germans were, they brought it with them because in many cases they became isolated from sort of the rest of America, especially in the colonial period. Mm-hmm. In South Carolina, they were brought in to be a buffer between the planters and the Indians in the upcountry in South Carolina, and then promptly were abandoned. So while that was bad in one sense, it also preserved their cultural traditions and their magical practices in a very pure form. I met a man there in 1974 named Lee Gandy, who wrote a book called Strange Experience, Secrets of a Hexenmeister. And he was a marvelous individual. I was about as skeptical a person as I could possibly be. And I really did first try to conduct all of the interactions like a field research in anthropology, very objective, very removed. And after a while, it just didn't work anymore. And because things happened, and I couldn't explain them, and I didn't know how to interpret them. And finally, I know Lee said to me one time, said, "Either you're going to have to come to terms with this, you're going to have to go home, write your paper, and never come back." But it was so marvelous that I couldn't turn away from it. So in anthropological sense, I went native, which means I stopped being objective or trying to be objective.
Right.
I always thought that was a bit of a false posture anyway. If you're going to really learn a culture or a practice, you're going to have to immerse yourself in it.
Agreed.
And try to see the world as they see it. And it was very shamanic. Many of the things they did were exactly what shamans do, or did still do in the before shamanism was all popular and you could take courses on it. I also studied the hoodoo tradition in the low country of South Carolina, and the Appalachian granny tradition, which I encountered when I was in graduate school at the University of Virginia, up in Southwest Virginia. So I've really had three traditions that I kind of immersed myself in, and the book that I wrote eventually became a memoir called American Shamans, Journeys with Traditional Healers, that came out in 2008, and to my surprise, has sold very well worldwide. The publisher took it to the Frankfurt Book Fair, and it sold all over Europe. You know, they're very interested in Europe, in our folk traditions, because just like language, when language came over here, it stayed pretty much the same. Dialects became the same, whereas they continue to evolve in Europe. So in many cases, you'll find a pocket of people in the United States that speak a form of English in a way that is just like it was 200 years ago. You see that out on the Maryland shore. So things became sort of frozen, and a lot of Europeans are fascinated with what came over and what developed here. I got a set of emails from a fellow in Austria. And what I guess I'd never heard is that a lot of these folk traditions, beliefs in spirits, and elves, and dwarves, and what have you, are still very much alive in Europe. And he talked about going with his grandmother as a boy on the full moon to feed the trolls at the waterfall. In other words, he's propitiating the nature spirits of the area,
right,
as they had for thousands of years. So it has become sort of a lifelong thing with me. I recently did a kind of went off my normal academic posture and went to a thing called Scarefest, which was the largest horror and paranormal convention in America. And they asked me to come there and speak about these folk traditions. And I'm thinking, nobody's going to come to hear this guy talk, especially this little gray-haired man, you know, from Kentucky. And especially because I was up against Josh Gates on the programming. And I remember turning to my wife and saying, I'll be lucky if I get six people here. There were over 40 in the room. They were standing room only. And they didn't leave, and they were totally engaged. And I was dumbfounded. It turned out to be a wonderful conference, and people were just kind of all over me all the time, which was great. I enjoyed it very much.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the sort of the local magical practices and folklorists in the Lowcountry in South Carolina. I've had the pleasure of doing a lot of vacationing in that area and became familiar while doing that with the local Gullah, some of the local Gullah practitioners. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Sure. It's called root doctoring down there. Just as the German thing in South Carolina is called using for sympathy. When it got its other name, root doctors in South Carolina were really a people who were African shamans.
Mm-hmm.
And when they came over with the slaves, they at first were forbidden to practice. And no one really looked after the slaves until, so they had to. They interpreted reality for the slaves within the African context. Here's the other part that's really interesting, is hoodoo became different from voodoo because voodoo came in through New Orleans and had a Roman Catholic flavor to it. So it had all these gods and practices that were very different from this African spirit tradition called hoodoo, conjure, root doctoring.
Mm-hmm.
And it started being practiced by white people. In fact, when I was encountering it in the 70s, my main contact was a man named James McTeer, who was a root doctor and had been a sheriff, a high sheriff of Beaufort at one time. He passed away at 79. Have you heard of him?
No, but I'm familiar with Beaufort. Spent a lot of time in Beaufort and Fripp Island in that area.
There were root doctors everywhere. They were very territorial. Sometimes in the pagan Wiccan community, they have what's called a witch war. Mm-hmm. You haven't seen a witch war like this until one of the root doctors offends another root doctor and they go to war with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Usually somebody gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I always tell people is don't think for a minute this is play. This is a deadly, serious business. But there again, they were also, especially after the Civil War, a lot of the slaves, especially on the Sea Islands, were basically abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
There really wasn't much happening for them. So nobody was looking after them. Nobody was feeding them. Nobody was doing much for them at all. So they went right back to their old practices, and it flourished, and it preserved the tradition. In all these cases, isolation preserved the tradition.
Right.
And there were a number. Well, you know, you probably have heard of Dr. Buzzard.
Oh, yeah.
You heard that name?
Mm-hmm.
He was the original Dr. Buzzard, believe it or not, was a white man.
Hmm.
And he's chronicled in the 1930s by Henry Hyatt Middleton, Henry Middleton Hyatt. And Dr. Buzzard when I, the real original Dr. Buzzard was named Stephanie, and that was S-T-E-P-H-A-N-Y Robinson. He lived on St. Helena Island.
Mm-hmm.
He was a presence to be reckoned with. There was no one that was his rival. He was famous for going in and what's called chewing the root in a courtroom, where he would come in at the defendant's request, generally, and sit within eyeshot of the witness as he got up onto the witness stand. Then he'd look at him, bare his eyes into him, and the witness would just go to pieces. And he became famous and quite wealthy for this kind of practice. People were coming from all over the United States to see him at one time. At the same time, you had this fellow, James McTeer, who was white, who was actually, his family was related to one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, who was raised in this atmosphere and picked it up. And he became the high sheriff at age 24 after his father left. And he learned this, that this practice of root doctoring was so powerful in the minds of people. Now, one has to question the legality of this, especially it wouldn't work today, but he would use his influence as a root doctor to extract a confession or get someone to comply. And he was a fascinating guy. I liked him a lot. He had a lot of charisma. I know about half the people that came to see him were white, half were black. And when I knew him, he had a real estate office in Beaufort. And he went through two curtains into his back room where he had his altar and where he did his healings or whatever he was doing. And so he would set me in the corner, introduce me as his associate from Columbia, and I got to watch what he did. I know one time I was watching him take a spirit out of a woman, and he was running his, he had big, huge hands, and he was running his hands up the back of her spine. And as he came out the top of her head, or across the top of her head, he slung it backwards. And I was standing there, and he touched me with his fingertips. And it was like being struck by lightning. I just saw stars.
Interesting.
I kind of stumbled back to the chair and sat down, like, head reeling, like, holy mackerel. And afterwards, he sent the lady on and walked over to me and said, "You were up, came up behind me, didn't you?" I said, "Uh-huh." He said, "Don't do that." He said, "You know, there's a lot of energy being released." I said, "Yes, I saw. I felt it too." So a fascinating person. And he was, like I say, he died in 1979. I sort of shifted out of the Lowcountry, and because I found this Texan mice are living 15 miles from me there in Lexington, South Carolina. Much easier to get to. And I became fast friends and his pupil, his apprentice, whatever. So I shifted from driving down to Beaufort, which was quite a hike from Columbia.
Yeah.
Up just 15 miles across the Lake Murray Dam into Lexington. And I had all the adventures that anyone could even imagine over there. In fact, his name, of course, I said before, was Lee Gandy. He lived in a true hex house, which was on the highest point between two moving bodies of water facing east. Had three doors. So you entered by the body, mind, and spirit. The place was owned by a woman who was prosecuted for witchcraft in 1796. You know, all of us think about the Salem witch trials, but the last witch trial in the United States was in South Carolina in 1820s. a long time after the Salem witch trials.
Yeah.
But this woman, Mary Engelmeyer, and you can actually look her up on the internet. Some people have written about her now. Was tortured. She was accused, found guilty, and tortured. And all she was a powwow to heal people. And by all accounts, was a very nice person. But like the women in Salem, if you've studied any of that, she was a person of power and money. And those kind of people could become targets very quickly, especially if they were women.
Yeah.
It's always interesting to me how the American folk healer could be the hero one week and the scapegoat the next.
Yeah.
If things went wrong, they got blamed. If something weird happened, they could easily find themselves blamed.
And you know that still happens.
Oh, sure it does.
Yeah.
Sure it does. We're still looking for scapegoats
mm-hmm.
in our society. But this Mary Engelmeyer was the only... They beat her, whipped her, and then put her feet to a fire till her soles of her feet popped off. And she crawled home, and she's the only one who sought legal redress. And a judge in Charleston granted her legal relief from the people that persecuted her. So Lee lived in her house. And it was quite a place. It was a place where you had to just accept whatever appeared, so to speak, and just take it in stride.
Cool.
Interesting. Yeah, well, you were talking about the hoodoo and voodoo. Now, I'm down here in Haiti.
Uh-huh. Remember, a lot of the early Africans were brought to the Caribbean first.
Yes.
And then delivered to the plantation areas of New Orleans and sometimes to the southeast as well.
Yeah. So voodoo really, I think, began here.
Yes, absolutely correct. Absolutely correct.
I've been talking with people during the week. And, you know, and it's been very interesting. You know, I'll be talking to someone, and they'll answer a few questions. They'll tell me a few stories. But I'm not a practitioner.
No, it's one of those. It's sort of like hoodoo. Nobody actually does this, but everybody's involved.
Yeah, everybody knows about it.
I'm
not a practitioner. You know.
No. Our family doesn't do that.
I heard stories growing up. That's it. Yeah.
Well, it's remain safe by remaining invisible. If you're down in the low country, you can spot a few things that'll tell you. You'll see bottle trees.
Mm-hmm.
You ever seen a bottle tree?
Mm-hmm.
Where they have bottles on branches of a tree out in the yard?
Yep.
That's a spirit trap. Another thing would be, of course, the Haint Blue, painted on the windowsills and on the door.
Mm-hmm.
On the underside of the porch, that's not just for pretty. That's to keep negative energy out of the house. You can see out in the backyard, there'd be a little pot sitting there with all kinds of stuff around it. That's a spirit pot. That's a direct African transmission or
mm-hmm.
transference. And, you know, it took a different course down in New Orleans. I've met a number of the wonderful people down there. I've not been to Haiti. I'd love to go. But there's a very well-developed modern voodoo culture in New Orleans. You have to get away from the touristy areas to find it. But, it's there. And very sincere, well-meaning people are very much committed to it. Sometimes you know... You can find it in the French Quarter, these little shops.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Have you been to New Orleans?
Yes, I have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I've been to about three of those shops, and they're tourist places. That's all they are.
Sure. I mean, if you can find a few things that you can use in your practice. one of the nicest places I found was called the Isle of Salvation Botanica. And it was run by a woman named Sally Ann Glassman, who was a woman of Jewish heritage, parents were atheists, grew up in Maine, went to Haiti, got trained as a voodoo priestess, came back to New Orleans and practiced. Very effective, very sincere. There's another lady called Priestess Miriam, who runs a voodoo spiritual temple. Very sincere, very powerful lady. I've been to a couple of her rituals. Awfully nice people. Awfully sincere. You can't fault them at any corner. And not a lot of the big ego trips that you see with people who are just sort of like new to the game, so to speak.
Yeah.
Or just out to make a buck.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, hey, we're at the bottom of the hour, so I'm just going to go ahead and play a quick song. And we're going to play Dagger of the Moon by Emerald Rose. So everybody stick around.
Oh, yeah. Those are great guys.
Yeah. Dagger of the Moon by Emerald Rose, and we'll be back here in just a few minutes.
Invest a storm, a cavern in spring and mouth, with its cadence and starlight, the blistered palm holding its tune. And would you still stand here, cock alone, with the baying of blood-eared hound, and suffer facing the serpent's bite, the dagger of the moon? Sing the heart of the water, shape the dun clay, see the fire, sink on the wind, spread your wings and fly high. Let the mirror call you, touch your doorway, no desire, but open at night, lest you surely die. In a secret round, on cloven step the circle spoke, in salted sands and tidal rooms. And hear a song that enchants the storm, a dolmen at ring and mouth, beyond the fog of astral smoke. without the strident clock writes two. Open your eyes, let it fall. A dagger of the moon.
Power in the universe, and we are perfect manifestations of that power.
And as such, we pray. We pray for peace. We pray for love. We pray for stability. We pray for the nation in which we live. We pray for the world.
We will it. We manifest it. We draw it to us. We receive it. We accept it, and we give thanks for it. And by our will, so mote it be.
To Terry and Onyx on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We're glad you're here. And now, back to the show.
We'll move you to Virginia.
Reverend Terry Power, thank you. From fishing.
It sounds I'm not hearing Terry, so I'm assuming that you all out there are not hearing Terry. Jack, are you still with us? Jack?
Okay. I'm right here.
Jack, are you with us?
I'm with you.
Okay. I think something happened to Terry's connection and he may have dropped out.
Yeah, I heard something going out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. I'm thinking that he's been having troubles with that connection in Haiti all week. So,
Okay, can you hear me now?
Oh. Yep, there you are, babe. Okay.
Okay, because I came back in and introduced you and said, coming to you live and talked about you being there home with the heart fires burning and all that. So I guess we're all back together now.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, we couldn't hear you after a certain point. So, but we're back together, so let's keep going.
All right, so... So, Jack, before the break, we were talking about, voodoo and hoodoo and the Low Countries and New Orleans. I want to talk a little bit more about, you said there was a third practice. You had mentioned the Pennsylvania Dutch.
Right. The German-American experience. Yeah.
Right, the German-American. And then you mentioned the African.
The Appalachian tradition.
Appalachian, that's it. What was your...
That's the granny tradition, which I think I was able to successfully connect to what's called the cunning man or cunning folk tradition of the British Isles. Have either of you heard of the cunning folk?
Yes.
Yes.
We're both of Irish extraction.
Okay. The cunning tradition is actually still alive over there. Like all these other things, it lives invisibly. But it's still quite alive, as is the fairy faith, although not the way it probably was 50 years ago. But it survived in Appalachia for the same reason that Hoodoo survived, for the same reason that Powwow are using survived, was basically there was a lot of isolation, and people had to depend on what they knew. There were no doctors. A lot of the granny women delivered babies. Two of the things that I really discovered during my initial research was, number one, I had a powwow in the family. It was my maternal great-grandfather, and he practiced exclusively on animals, which is something unique to the powwow tradition. Also, I had a granny who was my beloved great-grandmother, one of the dearest people I've ever known in my life. And she probably delivered, they think, between 500 to 600 babies in her lifetime. And my mother taught her to write her name. These people, a lot of these women were marvelous because they had success rates with babies and all that would rival any modern obstetrician. They knew, I always loved what they did, is they would go into a house where a woman was about to give birth. They'd throw all the men out. They would clean the house from top to bottom. And if you think about that, they may not have been doing it for hygienic reasons per se, but they were doing exactly the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
They would wash the woman, give her a bath. They would, I mean, they did instinctively or just by practice, they knew exactly what to do. There are a couple of really fine people that have continued to really develop the granny tradition. There's a woman named Byron Ballard from Asheville, North Carolina, who's done some marvelous writing on the granny tradition in Appalachian. She calls it Hillbilly Hoodoo. Wonderful lady. There are a couple of others that have written other things, but it's still living. It's still a living tradition, and people still seek the comfort and the magical efforts of these people. Here's another aspect of all of this for all three traditions. All these people were counselors.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first thing you always do with when a client comes to you, no matter what, is you sit down and talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And you listen very carefully to what they're saying and how they're saying it, so to help define what they really need to do, what you need to do as well for them. You also sometimes give them things to do. When I've been called to a house where there was a spirit issue, I always tell them, before I get there, I want the place clean top to bottom. I want everything put in order, because negative energies, negative spirits love chaotic, cluttered environments.
Mm-hmm.
And so what that does, do what now?
As if they can hide in the dust.
They absolutely can. They can hide in the clutter too. It makes it very hard to get them out, or even to get them properly addressed if there's just clutter everywhere. There's another a lady that I've known that's very knowledgeable. She's done a lot of popular writing. Her name is Jeannie Traynor, or they call her Silver Raven Wolf. That's her
mm-hmm.
magical name.
Mm-hmm.
She's also a pretty good powwow, I would say.
I heard her powwow years ago.
Yes. I remember finding that thing. It was called Hexcraft.
Mm-hmm.
And going, oh, my God, somebody actually wrote about this. And, you know, it was pretty good. There's been a lot of people who have written some really wonderful stuff lately that is more in tuned, is less sort of popularized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of Silver's stuff was sort of written in the Llewellyn style. The Llewellyn has its own style of presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's good. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. Certainly not anything wrong with that book. But there's been the tradition and the writing about that tradition has developed since then.
Yeah, actually, that book, I believe, was also recycled and renamed as American Folklore.
Yep. Yep, it sure was, but about 3 years later, yeah.
Yep. So if you have that, if you're thinking at home and you've got the American Folklore book and you're thinking, I have a book, but it's not called Hexcraft, yeah, it's the same book. It was just retitled.
Exactly.
Yep.
You know, a lot of people have argued with her and, you know, taken her to task. And, you know, it's sort of anybody who does makes a lot of money doing this is bound to get attacked. You know, as someone's always offended. You know, someone, you know, it doesn't match the way they see the tradition.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever take that posture because there's room for all of us. They're, you know, aside from the scoundrels who are out to hurt people.
Yeah.
And to take their money and abuse them as people.
Mm-hmm.
Those generally will expose themselves. But, you know, people who are writing in their tradition varies a little bit. Nah, let them alone. Most powwows, in fact, most hoodoo doctors were Christians.
Mm-hmm.
They were sitting right there in church on Sunday morning,
mm-hmm.
having done all their magic on Saturday night. They always lived at sort of the social periphery of society. And like I say, by doing so, they could become scapegoats for things that went wrong.
Yeah.
Very easily, sometimes with dire results. But the granny women also practiced wonderful. They were master herbalists. When I was in Pennsylvania. I said, you know, how many of you had a mustard plaster?
Oh yeah.
And a few painful hands went up. You know. They were horrible, but they would sweat the fever out of you.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of that sort of, this kind of treatment of disease goes right back to the 18th century.
Mm-hmm.
And who's to say, you know, these are not impractical people. If it worked, it worked.
Yeah.
And they believed in. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was going to say, I'll never forget the first time I had somebody tell me, if you have a really bad fever, take an onion, cut it in half, and put a half of each of the onion in your socks and put it up against the soles of your feet. And I was like, you people are crazy. That is not going to work. Onions in my socks? Are you crazy? No, 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 just try it, just try it, just try it. I'll be darned if it doesn't work.
Oh, yeah.
It's I don't know why it works, but it works.
Like cutting a potato in half to remove a wart.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why this works.
Yep.
Somebody was asking me in Pennsylvania, said, why does salt work as a barrier to spirits? I don't know, but it does.
Yeah.
And after a while, it's like, who cares? This works for what?
Exactly.
Iron is another disruptor of psychic energy.
Yes.
How many times have you gone in and looked up there and seen a horseshoe over a door?
Uh-huh.
That's not just for decoration. Well, some people maybe, but... In the old days, it was to keep the iron as a disruptive element,
mm-hmm.
and it will neutralize psychic energy around you. My teacher Lee Gandy probably had cannonballs. He had all iron implements all over the place, and one day I said to him, I said, "Why do you have all this iron around?" He said, "With all the spirits I have around me, if I didn't have this, I'd have no place to get a good night's sleep."
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a long tradition. There's a long tradition of iron being disruptive to fairies, and the little people.
The strega, they believe, you know, if you want to keep a strega from out of your house, according to Italian tradition, you put an iron bar across the threshold and salt above, and she will not be able to pass through the doorway.
Exactly,
mm-hmm.
and I've seen that in Appalachia as well.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it in the Lowcountry.
Yep.
There's a commonality of practice amongst all these traditions because the people realized what worked. And, you know, here's another thing. They did talk to each other. And they didn't worry about whether, oh, this is not pure this or pure that.
Right.
No, they just did what worked.
Exactly.
I know I had a fellow come to me and said, we must take, because some of the powwow charms, the spoken charms, have pre-Christian origins, and that's well documented. He said, we must take all of the Christianity out of powwow. Uh-huh. Okay. You can do that. You won't have powwow anymore. And you probably don't have enough of the other to make anything work. I mean, I don't understand that kind of stuff. Although, when I've done healings, if I've got, a Wiccan, a Wiccan client, I'll say in the name of the maiden and the mother and of the crone. If I've got a Christian client, I say in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. It works both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter.
No, it does not. Because what the words are conductors of energy. And as my teacher used to say, it's all energy. You, the rocks, the house, everything is energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all moving at different rates. Most of the reason we can't see a spirit is because it's moving in just enough faster vibration that we can't, it's out of our field of vision.
Right.
And oftentimes when you actually see a spirit, it's just simply slowed down enough for you to catch it.
Interesting.
And, you know, I was called to a house. I actually got a call from a, believe it or not, an associate pastor here in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And he says, you know, I need you to, they say you know about this stuff. I've got a family in my congregation that really needs some help. Would you please go help these people? They're good Christian people, but they've got some kind of thing, and I can't deal with it. So I call them up, and we talk. And it's what I call a contamination haunting, where you bring something into the house and it's carrying something on it. And unless you were to clean it up, and generally you can tell when you've got something like that, you don't bring it into the house until it's been thoroughly cleaned. And sometimes then it still doesn't work. You just have to get rid of it.
Yeah.
But they brought it in, put it up on the wall, and things can happen. The mother of the house touched it one day trying to dust it, and she began to have visions. So the first thing I did, well, let's start by securing the house. And we talked about putting some salt in the corners and, you know, doing some little things like that. Now, apparently that didn't help. So they called back, and I took my lunch hour and went over there. I took my divining rods, went around, because people like to see things happen. And all a divining rod is going to do is pick up energy.
Yeah.
It just notifies you there's something right here. So I was moving through the house after we did our, I listened to their story one more time. But I laughed because instead of a pinch of salt, he poured basically a whole box of salt in every corner.
Mm-hmm.
I guess a little would work, a lot would work better.
Yeah.
But I got to this one spot on the wall, and the two copper divining rods spun like a helicopter. So I grabbed them, and I thought, don't amplify their fear. They're already shook up. And I said, well, what was here? And they said, well, that's where we hung that thing. Okay. And I just moved on. I got to one back closet. They spun again. I didn't know what to make of that. So we went out. We said prayers, and I anointed them. So they wanted to be anointed. And then I began with the holy water, which is salt water. And I did that little space, cleaned it. I went back to the closet. As I got ready to begin with the holy water, one of the children in the house goes, what if it's Grandma? And the lady of the house looked me right in the eye and said, do it. And it was all I could do to keep my composure. Somebody didn't care for Grandma, obviously.
Yeah.
So I finished up. And apparently, and I actually sat them down. I said, look, folks, whatever's in here, your fear, your reactions to this is making it worse. In fact, it's feeding it. Mm-hmm. How about not? It's never hurt anybody. How about just not reacting to it? How about laughing at it? How about just ignoring it? I think you'll find it will dissipate when it has nothing to feed upon.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went on back to work, thinking, well, that was a different lunch hour. But apparently that did work, and I'm really grateful that it did. In other words, if you go antique shopping, be careful what you bring home. You clean it up the minute you get into the house.
Yeah.
Indeed. All right, well, Jack, it has been great having you, but we are hurtling rapidly towards the top of the hour.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Yeah, we need to schedule a time to come, you know, get you back and let's talk some more.
Sure.
You know, when you've got,
thanks for mentioning the music, too.
Oh, yes, sir. So,
well, yeah, Jack, why don't you tell us how people can get a hold of you if they'd like to, or if they'd like to purchase some of your music, if there's a website or anything that they can do that through. Why don't you just let us know what that would be?
Okay. The music's all over the place, but you can get it at CD Baby. You can get the books on Amazon. Golly. I've seen the book for sale all over the world in stores or online catalogs. But Amazon's got it. The CDs are on CD Baby. They can always contact me at jack.montgomery@wku.edu.
There you go.
I'm actually a professor and librarian at Western Kentucky University.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Oh, okay. My pleasure. Thanks. I've enjoyed chatting with you.
Oh, yeah, we'd love to have you back again. You're fascinating, interesting, lots of stuff to talk about.
Okay.
If you'd like to get a hold of either myself or Terry, we can be emailed at littlestonebridge@gmail.com.
Okay.
You can reach me directly at my Facebook page, either Spiritual Wellness Physical Health, Facebook page, or my personal Facebook page, Robin A. McKean, McKean, on Facebook. And Terry, how can people get a hold of you if they'd like to get in touch with you?
Well, I mean, the easiest way is to email
Littlestonebridge email. Yeah, Terry's connection is bad again, I can hear. And you can also reach Terry at his Facebook page, which is Reverend Terry Power HP. Or you can also always get in touch with us here at the radio station if you had any comments about a show, a guest, one of the hosts of one of the shows. You can always reach us at surn.org@gmail.com and or Spiritual Unity Radio Network page on Facebook as well. And so we're pretty easy to get a hold of one way or the other. No matter how you reach out to us, please let us know in the subject line or title, you know, what it is that your conversation, whether it's a question for one of the shows or a suggestion for a guest or whatever it is, a complaint. If it's a complaint, address it to Terry Power so that he knows what to look for. And we look forward to being back again next week on the show here. Terry, can we hear you now?
I believe I think the connection's a little better.
Yes, much better. Anything you'd like to say in wrapping up?
All right. Well, no, I think I think everything's been said. Jack, again, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Have a great night, Jack.
Hey, you too.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. You there, Terry? Terry?
listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.